Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. I got to take my microphone off of mute. Sorry about that. Good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. It's always such a pleasure to be with you here each week. It's now November 18th, and it's 6 o'clock on the West Coast. It's 9 p.m. on the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. where here I am in my home in Sedona, Arizona. I want to thank everybody for joining me again this week. I have a different topic that I'm going to talk about, but things are progressing very, very well. It's interesting because I've always stated, I know most of you are here because originally it was all around the financial issues. I'm going to make a statement on that in just a little bit. But allow me just to make, first of all, a couple of kind of administrative announcements. Obviously, on the workshops, I'm going to be in Baltimore this weekend. We still have about 4 seats. Technically, it's a sellout, but what I also get to do, I can bring in some extra chairs and I can actually get about 4 more people in there. And then 2 weeks after that, on December 5th, we're going to be in Seattle. I've only had the registration up for Seattle for, let's see, about 2.5 days, and we are already around at close to 70% capacity. So the tickets in Seattle are going very rapidly. January 9th, so I'll take a whole month off because I don't want to do anything, during the Christmas holiday season. January 9th, I'm going to be back here in Sedona. And I know that's a place that people always love to come. It's a great place if you want to get away from the winter weather. Sedona is a nice place to be because 8 out of every 10 days, it's sunshine here for us in Sedona. And it's been, we actually did have a little bit of snow on Monday. But Tuesday was blue skies, today was blue skies, tomorrow was blue skies, and it's almost always blue skies in Sedona. And I have, you folks, you know that I lived in the Seattle area for 32 years. And I saw the weather there in the last couple of days, and I'm not missing it. They had a huge rain and windstorm. I mean, they had some places that the winds were up over 100 miles an hour. There were trees that were blowing down. They ended up getting a couple inches of rain, and I guess they even had about 2 feet of snow in the mountains. So I wasn't missing it. I did not miss the storm in the Northwest. And because, that mid-October rolls around, it becomes gray and damp and drizzling. It's like that for 4 to 5 months, and I had my share of that. I'm enjoying the blue skies, the blue sky weather. So, okay, so those are the 3 workshops. Now, I want to say thank you. Thank you to everybody that last Sunday joined us on the community prayer. We ended up having over 400 people that had participated throughout, about the 25 minutes that we were there on the air. A couple bugs to work out. I understand that. Some of you complained about, every time some of you check in, you get the ding. Well, I've worked that out. I was going to do it every other week. But the response was so strong, we changed. We're just going to do this every week. I won't go a long time. I won't go more than 15 to 20 minutes, so I'm not going to abuse the time. We're going to do it at 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern time. And if you can join us live. And there will be 2 options now. And I will send out a newsletter on Friday night with the details. It'll have the call-in phone number so you can call in on the phone. Or you can also listen on your computer, and there'll be a website connection for that. And it'll have all the details that are there. And we will also record the call so that if you can't listen in live, you can then listen to it at a later time. And it's about a community. It's what I called community prayer. Because, we have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, for those blessings to come through. And it's time for us to step up and do something and not just be passive with more waiting. And I share some things about the format of prayer, of how I view prayer. I've been around different forms of spiritual teachings and prayer for almost 40 years. And what I share is a little bit different, but also what I share comes directly out of, the teachings of A Course in Miracles, because of which I'm an avid student of. So we're going to be doing that on Sunday night. Another thing, I just want to say thank you. Because, each week when I do a newsletter, I always do the majority of the content in video format and post it on YouTube. So not only are you reading the newsletter, you're clicking and you're going to YouTube and you're watching the weekly newsletter. This week, Well, let me say this. I've been doing this now for just a little over 25 months. And this week, I passed a major, major milestone. I passed the 1 million views mark this week, which means I've had people click on my YouTube videos over 1 million times. And I just want to say thank you. It's you know, it's kind of a major milestone. When you hit one, that's a lot. That's no small number. And I just want to say thank you very much for all of your support, all of your trust, all of your willingness to join us here as we are here in together, you know, in this community endeavor together. So now let me make just one quick statement about financial issues, and then I'll bring on, you know, Blanca, my associate here. There's not been a lot of news on the financial side, and I don't come out, and I'm not going to sugarcoat stuff. If there's nothing, you're not going to say anything. But I also have to be very honest. I did say at one point in time, a couple months ago, that there were a number of different private transactions, you know, that were going on. I've been contacted by a couple of them, and I have been asked to basically say, don't talk, don't say anything. That should tell you something that's going on. I can't say anything more than that. Just understand and know there's good news going on behind the scenes. And I cannot say anything more than that. And that's going to be it on that. I might even be stretching that just a little bit, but just understand that when we go silent and we go quiet, that's actually some pretty good news of what's developing. I can say one thing. It was after my second trip to China back in February that the ambassador had made a comment that nothing would really happen on the financial front until the Chinese yuan became a part of the world reserve currency basket. Well, guess what? It was just in the last week or two that the International Monetary Fund came out with a press release announcement that on November 30th, a week from Monday, they are going to have a special meeting around that issue. It says that they are going to discuss and take a vote on it. Here's the reality, folks. It's already a done deal. Because, see, they would not call a special meeting, and they would not announce that they're going to discuss it and do it unless they knew they already had the votes and the decision was already made. They're not going to come in, take a vote, and the vote fails. They just don't do it. They do business that way. It did say, I saw in a press release, that the United States has already given us its blessing. So that means on November 30th, one of the things that we have been waiting for months and months, a major, major issue is going to happen. So that's it, basically, on the announcement side. Blanca, how are you doing here tonight, and how's the weather in Atlanta?
We're doing great, Dave, over here, and we had started the week off very nicely, but we got a lot of rain today, thunder showers and rain, so we've got kind of those rainy, gray kind of days going. But, well, congratulations on your 1 million mark. That's quite an accomplishment, so that means you've reached a lot of ears and a lot of brains with, you know, wonderful information, so congratulations, and on to your next million.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to admit, you know, the more I talk about spiritual stuff, the fewer people that listen. But it just is what it is, and that's the way that it is. You know, people get enticed and wanting to know about the money, and I could go out there and be like some of the others, and I could just talk, and say, tomorrow, next week, this weekend, you know, and I could have my 20,000 people. But I'm sorry, I don't go there. I'm not going to, you know, there's a point of integrity. For what's there. And I had announced, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, gee, if we had 1,000 people that were really deeply committed and really passionate about wanting to see this come forward, and if we brought that many people together in a coordinated community prayer event, we could accomplish a lot more than 30,000, 50,000, or 100,000 people that are just, it's all about the money. Because it's always the intent and the energy behind it that makes that happen. And so that's why I talk about some of the things that I talk about on what I would call the spiritual side, because it's not about religion, it's about spirituality. And there's a big, big difference between the two. Spirituality can encompass a number of different religious faiths and practices. But spirituality is based on, you know, basic principles of how this universe works and how this world works and how we can get stuff done. And we're not just spinning our wheels. We're not just going from one experience to the next. And we're not just saying, I'm hoping. And we continue to go through the frustration and the pain and wondering why nothing is happening for me. Well, there's reasons why.
Right.
And that's part of the issue that we're going to lead up to in tonight's discussion.
Right, right. Well, Alan and I joined you for that prayer session. That was quite a good experience. First of all, we really appreciated the way you kind of did your little tutorial there about how you approached prayer, and it kind of helped us get in the right mindset and get a little bit more of a sense of unity with the other people who were joining us. And then as you led us through that, that was quite an experience. So even, I mean, of course, it's wonderful to be proactive and co-creating with your brothers and sisters. It's a marvelous experience. But just being there and being part of the prayer, I think, really was a nice experience for us and good for the soul. So thank you for stepping forward, and hopefully we'll continue to attract more and more people to join us.
Yeah, I think the one core thing that I want to talk about on that, and I'll cover that, you know, on Sunday night. For so many years and so many decades, and it's not so much what we've been taught, but what we picked up from others around us, we've always kind of equated prayer as asking God. It was always about going to God and asking for stuff, and or even just going to God and saying, I'm gratitude and I'm very, very thankful. It's not about words. It's not about asking. It's about joining. It's about joining in a sense of presence, joining in a sense of unity, and joining in a sense of oneness. Because the soul down inside already knows everything it is that we want, because we've expressed that in various thought, various actions, various discussions and attitudes that we have toward others. So at that soul level, it already knows what it is we want. So what it is we learn how to remove the blocks so the stuff can come forward, instead of mustering up all this energy in the different types of modalities or the different types of forms of practice that we do in prayer, of asking, beseeching, and binding and releasing and all the different types of things that can be done. It's real simple. You just join. And joining with God is something that takes place at a very deep level, and it means you're going to quiet your mind is what you're going to do. And that's the real essence of what prayer is about.
Right, and we were placed more in a state of allowing and receiving,
yes,
as opposed to lacking and wanting.
Mm-hmm. It's allowing it to come forward, and it's giving it permission and energy to come forward. It's giving it intent to come forward, and it's getting our ego mind out of the way, because it's the ego mind that blocks it and stops it, and all of its issues of wanting and sense of thoughts of scarcity and lack and fear and frustration and anxiety and anger and stuff like that. Those are all aspects of what is called an ego mind. And when we learn to quiet that ego mind and to heal that ego mind, then whatever it is that's the divine comes forward automatically. It just automatically comes forward within us.
Right. Well, how glorious when it comes through and all for us to feel that we were part of the co-creation of that blessing. It's just going to be marvelous. And so it's great that you took leadership to lead us through that. And it's good. We'll do it every Sunday. We'll be there, and hopefully it'll have a nice snowball effect. But I did want to ask you one thing, because I do remember, unless you were going to say something else about that.
No, go ahead.
No, well, the thing about the Chinese yuan, and we also saw it. It was just a blip, but it was a significant blip with the announcement the IMF was going to meet in November to consider this. And, of course, we also noticed how the United States was very, you know, fine. They approved, et cetera, whereas before, any time that topic was brought up, there was a lot of noise around it from the U.S. But I can't say I can totally recall why the ambassador was saying that would be kind of a major step or would be a significant move.
By the fact that the Chinese yuan is now in the basket of reserve world currencies. There's more than one. The U.S.
Right.
dollar is there. The Japanese yen is there. The German, I think the German mark and the British pound, I think, are there. And I think the Swiss franc. They are the ones that make up what are called the world reserve currencies. And It's basically a recognition that it's China has come to the forefront as a very powerful economy, and that their currency is very, very solid. And what it also means is by using a world reserve currency is that it will become a commonly traded currency. That had to happen so we could see the transition of what I call the old financial system coming into the new.
Because it had
to give countries the options of saying, I don't want to use the U.S. dollar to do my international trading anymore. I want to use the Chinese yuan as the source of currency to use my international trading, because that currency is more stable, it's more solid, and it's not a part of the G7 countries that are all in debt beyond their ability to recover, whose economies could fall apart overnight.
Right.
And they needed to bring in a very, very solid economy that is growing and strong before they could move forward. And that's how I understand it.
Right.
There's other stuff. It's about the whole issue of the BRICS alliance. It's about the new SWIFT system. It's all a part of the packages to bring in and make the transition into a new financial system that we have.
Right, and which means that there's alternatives to what we're currently seeing and witnessing and experiencing, and in terms of the power structures that are in place, because so much is tied to the dollar.
Yeah. Let me make a few more comments that I can about, you know, because I've been getting some emails and phone calls and discussions about people saying, you know, you haven't been talking with the ambassador that much lately. No, I haven't. It's because, you know, he's on his own now. He has his own program. He has the globalmissionofpeace.com. He has his own website there. He does 2 to 3 YouTube videos per week. That's where they're running all the projects. He has his symposium that people have been a part of. They've had people that have already, whose projects have been approved and have already traveled to Hong Kong to open up their bank accounts. They're still waiting for funding to be released. But, you know, and in they're going to have another meeting basically up in the Northeast in Pennsylvania on December 6th. So he's got his own organization. So my job was to help bring him forward. But I don't need to have him all the time. Now, do we still talk? We still talk. We were supposed to have a discussion today, but he got tied up and wasn't able to make it today. And, but, you know, a lot of it is we're just kind of in a waiting and a limbo stage. But some people have been saying, is this guy really for real? Is his family really for real? Well, yeah. I made 3 trips to China. I met with him. I've been able to see it and taste it and touch it. A lot of the stuff that's going on there. But there are some things that happen at a very, very high level that's just not moving forward yet. And that's a lot of it is what we're waiting for. And so to me, you know, people says, is this really going to happen? Well, I said, everything within me says yes. I have absolutely no reason to believe it is not going to happen. It's not a question of if, it's only a matter of when. And that when is, there's a lot of different factors. You know, for a long, long time, I was saying, you know, the cabal had to be neutered. Well, they're still not completely out of the way. But more than that, you had to have a new financial system that was ready in totality to be put into place. And those are logistics that aren't that simple. Like one example is, let's talk about, you know, if all of a sudden we make a transition in currencies and all of a sudden we get what are called the new TRNs, the new Treasury Reserve Notes versus the current Federal Reserve Notes. Well, it's going to be a completely different currency that comes out. What does that mean? It means that you've got ATMs and vending machines all around, not only the United States, all around the world that aren't ready to accept a new currency. And they can't pre-announce that stuff and start doing this in the beginning. So it means that, you know, where you're actually using physical currencies and you got, you know, ATM machines, you know, that receive, you know, the FRNs, but they aren't programmed to the new stuff. Just by the fact that the new TRNs are announced and released, it means that there's going to be a huge activity of having to reprogram all kinds of machines all around the world that accept the U.S. dollar. So what it means is there's going to be a phasing in and a phasing out. And so all that kind of stuff takes massive planning behind the scenes. And it's not all that simple. You know, and this is stuff they've been planning and working and organizing on for a long time, but they cannot make any announcement on it. Because the minute you make an announcement on it, then Wall Street goes berserk, and then Wall Street basically starts hedging bets against it, and it creates, you know, what is called pre-market conditions, which means is it prejudices the markets. And that's, you know, people make riches and people lose tons of money because of that. And they're innocent and they aren't involved in any of it. So that's why it can't be pre-announced or kind of let out in any fashion or form whatsoever in advance. We can talk about it on programs like this, but how many people am I going to reach? In contrast, you know, if it was CNBC or, you know, a CBS or ABC or any of the mainstream media, if they started talking about it and it comes on the front page of the New York Times, that's a totally different story.
Right. This story about the Chinese yuan, the likelihood that it's going to be voted in November, that you don't see it anywhere in the main news media at all. You don't see that.
That story. I know. You see, kind of, I know. The mainstream media, now, there's been just little tiny blurbs on it by CNBC. But here's the issue is, the reason they don't talk about it that much is because of the fact that for the everyday American, doesn't affect them. So what? I'm, you know, okay, the Chinese yuan is now part of the world reserve currency basket. Well, how does that affect me getting up tomorrow morning, going to work, doing my job, coming home, taking care of my family, you know, feeding the kids, you know, making sure that they go to bed and they can go to school, okay, and Johnny and Susie, you know, want to play their basketball games this weekend. You know, I mean, so what does it change in that everyday life? Absolutely nothing for the average person. So that's why we don't see a lot of broadcasting on it. But obviously, because of the nature of our program, we have an interest in it.
Right. Well, it just depends on what kind of perspective. If all you have is like tunnel vision about
yeah.
your life, you know, then, you know, but some people are a little bit more interested in broader events in life. And so that's why it's kind of interesting. Yes. And also the whole, we have a friend who actually works for one of the biggest banks. And we were just saying, hey, have you heard about SIPs being implemented and there's an alternative to Swiss? And he says, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's funny. You have a particular audience that's paying attention to particular topics that maybe not a whole lot of people pay attention to, or it's a very specific audience is what's
well,
probably
we have
correct.
A very specific vested interest in it.
Right.
And a lot of us do. And it's interesting, and it'd be interesting when it all shifts and changes. So, you know, because I've been talking about this for a little over 2 years, and a lot of interesting experiences. I always wish I could say more, but you know, there's people out there that don't like what I have to do, and if I start saying more, they're gonna do what they want would like to do that I don't want them to do. And
exactly, we don't want that either.
Yeah.
Now the ambassador does call in in your workshop, doesn't he? I mean, when we went here in Atlanta, he called in. Uh-huh.
Yes, I mean, when I have the workshops, the ambassador is still always present with an open Q&A. He will talk for 15, 20 minutes, and then we go into an open Q&A where anybody present can ask him any questions that they want. So he does still do that. I still invite him to come, you know, to all of those.
That's
He's
great.
Always on the agenda at the workshops. But there's no really big need, you know, for me to bring him here on my radio program or in my newsletters, because he has his own. You can go and you can listen to it there. So,
right. And so maybe when you feel the time is right, it could happen again. Obviously, you have a lot of listeners who trust you. So if they kind of see the ambassador on your show, or new people who don't know about the ambassador, here on your show, perhaps there's a little bit more of a trust factor because, you know, they've listened to you or, you know, it just depends, the show that they hear.
It might be time to bring him back for another interview, kind of a wrap-up interview,
right.
Because, you know, it
right.
is true. I've had somewhat of a transition in the audience. I mean, some people go and new people come, and it's been a while since
right.
I've had him on here, when I used to have him on here all the time. I mean, he was always
right.
part of the focus of the attention of all the conversations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's back to he's not my life, and I don't want to say that in a negative fashion. It was like it wasn't, you know, the Sedona Connection radio program. It was, let's talk about the ambassador program and let's talk about the Chinese dragon family and their opinions on everything that's going on around the money stuff. Well, he has his own stuff now. And so, and I get
right.
to do what I love to do and it brings the balance that's in there. So.
Right. So maybe when the time's right, he can make another appearance too, because I think a lot of his exposure was because of being on your show. So
well,
you may
yes.
have another group of listeners that it's time for them to learn about the ambassador, or or people who have been with you for a while to see, you know, what he's saying now.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, you know, a good 80 to maybe 90% of his audience are people that originally came from me. And they heard about him, they were introduced to him, and they were interested in project funding, and it came through my talking about it on the program. It was my talking about it at the workshops and always and having him on frequently. And that's what gave the foundation for him to go from. And but, you know, I don't mind doing that. I'm a networker. That's what I do. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had this wonderful lady, Susan Marie, on my program. She had basically no foundation in what she was doing. And the next thing you know, within a week and a half, she gets over 400 emails from me. And she goes to Dallas and she has about 40 people show up for activation sessions. And it came because of her being introduced on my program, you know. And I'm a networker. I'm very cautious and selective about who I bring on. If I bring anybody on, it's because they fit into what I call the major theme and direction of where I see us going and what I would like to do. And that's my choice, you know, because it's my program.
Right.
I don't need to, you know, it's, you know, I don't have any commercials. I don't have any advertisers that I'm subject to. You know, I mean, this program gets paid out of, you know, what the money and the revenue that I gain from the workshops. And you know, what I say is, you know, the radio program is free. The newsletter is free. Anybody at any time can send me an email with questions, and all of that stuff is free. And then the workshops is I give information there that's a little bit more, and people have to pay to come to that. But that's how I support myself. That's how I make a living, and that's how I fund everything else that I do. But I also want to say, yes, I charge, but I also have a very inexpensive scholarship rate. And the bottom line is, if somebody shows up and they can't afford it and I've got room, they can come in. We've had a benefactor who came through and had said, you know, what happens at these workshops is so important, so powerful. He wants people to come. So at the Baltimore workshop, I've got about 18 people that are coming free on a benefactor status because, you know, I was allotted so many seats. And after Baltimore, I'll still have around 25 more that will be available for the next two workshops for people to take advantage of that. And then once they're used up, they're used up. And, you know, I post on my show, says, you know, you can come at a scholarship rate of $35, but you have to ask for it. And I don't always promote it, but, you know, I'll mention it here and stuff like that. But you have to ask for it. And if you do ask for it, I'll let you come at that rate. But even if that, if you send me a special request, I'm always willing to consider it. I've got some people that say, you know, I can't afford the full rate, but I feel like I should pay more than scholarship. And I say, well, pay me what you can, you know.
Right.
It's not about the money. And, you know, there's another little interesting thing. You know, when people show up and that they still have a balance to pay, it's all totally the honor system. We don't, I don't question one bit. It's just, you tell me what you owe. And that's what I accept. We never question them. It's all on the honor system. So it's not about, you know, you got to pay it or you can't come in. No. But yet, I still have to make a living. You know, I mean, that's...
For sure.
Yeah.
And you, of course, you invest a lot of time and energy and, of course, your travel and all that. So that's understood. But it's quite generous, the scholarship opportunity and then the benefactor. Wow. You know, people can definitely take advantage of that. So that's all good. So obviously, your message is supposed to be delivered.
Yes. And it's all, you know, there's information that I do share there that I just don't share here. Part of it is I can't. I can't, that stuff I just can't let out onto the internet because there are people that don't like me. And I have been told, I mean, these are pretty big, you know, black ops type of people that it's been told to me by various sources. They don't just not like you. They hate you with a passion. They absolutely hate you with a passion. And they would take you down if they could. And all I know is that I just know that I'm divinely protected. And I've experienced that over and over and over and over again. And so I just do what I'm supposed to do, and I don't worry about it, and I don't even think about it. But it's reflected in the workshops because, you know, 20 to 25% of the people who come are repeats. Now, they come back because they want to. I had one guy at Minneapolis, you know, last 2 weeks ago. This was his fourth time. I have a guy that's going to be coming to Baltimore. It's going to be his fourth time. These people, they choose to come because they love what's there, and they love the energy of what's there, and the crowd, and the information. It just, it's very, very positive. I have people tell me, says that you have given me information that I have never heard, seen anywhere else. And what you do is that you paint the big picture of
right.
who we are in this world, where we came from, and why this world is the way that it is. And here's the answer of how we fix it. And that, in essence, is the gist of what is there. And it's all documented. It's not just a bunch of hearsay and opinion. It's all documented from historical research to say this is what's been kept from us. This is the story that the cabal has hidden from us, and they have not told us. What I call and this is the story that operates in the shadow world, and how it works. And so, but here, you know, Blanca, it's interesting. I'm going to do something this weekend at Baltimore I've never done before. You've heard about the fact that, you know, I'm supposed to be writing a book on this, and I've known that, and I've kind of, you know,
right.
vacillated back and forth. What's the real format? Well, the book is probably going to follow somewhat, you know, the agenda and the format of the workshop. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to audio record the workshop this weekend. Now, that is not for dissemination. It's not,
right.
You know, but what I get to do, because I audio record it and I save it as an MP3 file, and then I'll bring it back home, and then I basically put that file into the computer, and it will translate it into text. And right there is about a good 50 to 60% of the whole book. That's already done. And so all I have to do is edit it, organize it, fill it, you
right.
know, and you know, you know, bring in additional material with footnotes and all that kind of stuff. And so that'd be that. And I'm also looking at doing some video recording of it. What a lot of people don't know about Sedona is that, you know, not only is it this very, very unique place about the energy, but Sedona was also one of the original places that a lot of the old Western movies were filmed in the late 50s and the early 60s.
Right.
I mean, there's Western movies with John Wayne and, you know, Elvis Presley and stuff like that. And there's actually a small movie museum here in Sedona. Well, out of that was birthed what was called the Sedona Film Festival. It's a huge event that they have where thousands and thousands of people come here to the Sedona Film Festival each year. It goes on for a full week. And they also have a film school here where they teach you how to film. And so I get to take advantage of that, and I'm going to go to the film school and get some of this to say, hey, would you guys like to record me for some experience?
Right.
And most of them
right.
will say, absolutely, yes, you know, because it's not hard, because I'm just standing up and talking, you know, and I got
right.
a PowerPoint going on. And so it's just a matter of them coming in with how many different cameras from different angles and deciding how they want to do it. You know, I might be able to pay, a student fee for that. But, you know, you do
right.
that professionally, you're talking thousands of dollars to have that done. And but it is
yeah, it
could
be part
you know,
of their course activity or something if they you
right.
know
yeah.
a project
so,
that they
so,
can turn in for credit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have any dates on that. I don't have any projections on it, but I do know it's going to be coming. But it's all about telling the story. It's about telling the story that we live in a world where there's a shadow world that really controls and runs what goes on. Whether it's the influence of money, whether it's the influence of government, whether it's the influence of media, and everything seems to run around the power of the dollar. And we in America, even, you know, President Carter came right out and said, we don't have a democracy anymore. We have a corporatocracy. It's the corporations that really run everything. And it's about the corporations making a dollar. And there's so many things that are happening in our world where the corporations block progress, block various forms of health and healing issues so that they can keep people sick and make money. And there's, you know, the free energy that is available. So they block that so that the petroleum and oil industry and the different forms of the energy industries can still continue to be their multi-billion dollar industries. Because, you know, if you come out with free energy, that means the oil industry goes away, obsolete. Billions of dollars
right.
of industry becomes obsolete. So, you know, there's all kinds of different things like that, what we call the shadow world, that really truly runs and controls what goes on. And my job in the book is to basically tell the story about the shadow world, where did it come from, how it came into existence, who started it, who's controlled it and why they've been, why it has been that the way it is, and also how we are in the era of shift and change, and all of that is changing, and that shadow world is now being exposed. The shadow is being brought to the light, and that lifestyle is going to go away. Now, it will take time, yes, but it's fading out. It's going away. And there's a new, brighter light of consciousness and awareness that is coming and rising to the existence. And then what I also do, I talk about how do we shift and influence that change and accelerate it to happen for us. So I just kind of basically gave you the outline of the workshop.
So I've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's been the theme of your workshops.
Anything else you would like to add as before I get into the main topic tonight? You know, if that's
no, I think maybe that a congratulations on your $1 million mark and a thank you for the prayer session, and that's basically it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, folks, I'm going to tell you what I want to do tonight. I don't anticipate spending a lot of time talking about the topic tonight. Because what I would really like you to do is go back and watch the video, the YouTube video. I shared something with you that to me, it's taken me a number of years to come and truly comprehend and understand. But I get it when I understand it is a very, very root, bottom, core issue about life for us here on planet Earth and throughout the whole universe. We live in a world, and it's talking about the role of the human ego. And I call it the human ego, but really it's the ego because it involves more than just humans. But I use the term human ego because that's how we relate to it as human beings. We live in a world, it's called a world of dualism. And we also understand that everything in this universe is energy, and it evolves around energy. Nothing in this world, in fact, even Einstein came out and said there is no such thing as matter. Now, we're taught in our basic physics classes that everything of a physical substance is contained of matter. And matter is comprised of atoms and molecules and electrons and protons. But when you get below the electrons and the protons, it's just nothing but vibrating energy. Everything in this universe is nothing but vibrating energy. And all energy vibrates at a different frequencies and different rates of frequency and vibration. And those different rates of frequencies and vibrations is what gives the appearance of something being physical. So we think that we live in a physical world, but in reality, we live in a vibrating, energetic hologram. And it's our mind that gives us the sense of physicality. And it's our mind that gives us this sense of time and space. But in this world, everything also has dualism, and it's dualistic in its nature. It's the yin and the yang, the yes and the no, the up and the down, the good and the bad, the male and the female. The list just goes on and on and on and on and on. It's all dualistic. Everything in this universe has a form of dualism to it. And but not only that, our human mind is the very essence and the core of what creates the world of what who we are. When you strip away the sense of physicality, when you strip away the sense of an energy, etheric energy process or being, when you strip away all the stuff and get down to the very bottom core of it, at its very core, it's dualistic in nature, it's separate in its nature. But that is the illusion. Because that's how our, and it's the mind is all that there is. And the mind processes it as everything being dualistic. But because that is not true, that's what creates the world of being an illusion. Albert Einstein said that over 100 years ago. This world is just an illusion. There is no such thing as matter. E equals mc squared. Everything is just relative based on the perception that the mind brings to it. So based on that, because we perceive a world of dualism, we therefore experience a world of dualism. But here's what's real. Everything is one. There is, you see, when you get beyond the sense of consciousness, of awareness, at that point, everything is unified. Everything is connected. Everything is one. Everything of God happens in a sense of oneness. Everything of heaven happens in a sense of oneness. And it's because we think and we have this dualistic mind, the reason that we have so many problems, so many conflicts, so much pain, so much suffering, so much anxiety, so much fear, is because the dualistic mind is operating in contrast to oneness. It's creating friction, in so many words. We have a thought process that creates friction to what is true. We have two minds. And these are thought processes that governs and makes up the universe that we perceive and live in. One mind is the ego mind, and the other is the divine mind. The divine mind is that sense of unity, that deep sense of peace, that sense of wonder, that sense of heaven. But what we have chosen to do, because we chose to separate ourselves from God, that's the very basic foundation. Of all religions, they have at the very basic foundation of them this concept of separation from God. We created the dualistic thinking system, and that is the ego thought system. Ego means based on self. I am my own. I am different from you. You are you. I am me. You are separate from me. We are two different beings. That thought system creates friction to the thought system of divineness, of oneness, of heaven. That creates all of our problems at the very root core of all of it. All of us came from God. And in the very root of us, in every one of us, is the very divine essence of who we are as divine beings. But what happens is when we are born and we come into this world in these physical bodies, the ego thought system is the default thought system. It's what we're taught, what we've adapted, it's what we have trained ourselves, and how we have programmed our minds. And we all have one primary objective. That's to get back home. Get back home to heaven. Get back home to God. Everything else is superfluous or in contrast to that. Nothing else matters. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And undoing or healing this ego mind should be, for all of us, the absolute number one objective and priority in our lives. Everything else should be secondary to that. Because until we come to that point and we focus on other things, we give our attention to other things, we give our desires to other things, we have our wants and other things, we have our passions and other things, they're all just distractions. Now, that doesn't mean we can't experience all those other things. It's not that we don't experience them. It's not that they don't exist. It's the fact that we attach ourselves to them. We give our focus and our energy to them, and then we develop a belief in them. And when you do that, then you're attached to the ego thought process. Now, not all ego stuff is bad, because the ego thought system can create very good, fun, enjoyable, loving experiences, but it's still a product of separation. Let me give an example. Love. Couples, relationships, being madly in love with another person. That can be an absolutely wonderful, passionate experience. But yet it's still dualistic in nature. You, them, the other. That's why loving relationships can also be filled with so much drama. Because in the passion of wanting this love, what we're really down inside, what we're longing for union. We're longing for oneness. And because we have bypassed our oneness with God, we look for it in someone else. We look for it in a relationship. We look for it sometimes in our jobs or something that gives us meaning, a sense of purpose. We look for it in our experiences that gives us a sense of meaning and purpose. But it always fails. Always fails. And we'll keep going through all these different experiences. And then what I said, you know, in the video that we released, you know, this week was, it's kind of like going to the amusement park. Different rides, different options, different experiences, and the ego says, let's go try this one. And yet we're trying it, and because we become attached to it, and because we so believe in it, we give ourselves to it. And we do it for a while, and we do it for a while. But down inside, it's not touching the cry of the soul. It says, I want to go home. I want to get back to that loving sense of God, because there is nothing else other than that. I want to get back to that oneness of God. And so we go out and we experience that stuff and we realize this isn't cutting it. It's just not quite doing it. And so because we don't understand, I mean, I'm talking to you about stuff, understanding, you know, the role of the human ego and the ego mind. How often have you heard this stuff before? I didn't really hear it and to understand it until just 3 and 4 years ago in my life. I never knew this. I had heard about it, but I never comprehended it. And so what happens is the ego itself will create this veil, create this blindness of doing anything that it can so that we can't see it and what it is and how it controls our lives. So we keep looking, 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 experiencing, experiencing, experiencing all the different rides in the ego, in the amusement park. And it's just like getting on a merry-go-round, and we go round and round and round and say, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. I love this. Until we come down to the point, and finally we get tired of it, and we find it doesn't work. And then when you finally come to the point of at the level of the soul saying, none of this stuff is working. I've done it all. That's when you begin to surrender, and you begin to hear the divine mind coming forward. Because see, all of those experiences can, in some ways, they're shutting out the divine mind. And yet many of those experiences can be spiritually wonderful, loving, compassionate, great activities and experiences that you think you're in oneness with God. And you can experience that oneness temporarily, but it won't last because you still got this ego thought system that you have not undone. And you have to undo it. You have to reprogram it. You have to, I should say, unprogram the ego thought system. That thought system has to be unprogrammed. And until then, any experience that you have, anything that you seek, doesn't do it. All your compassionate, loving, and caring, and blessing, and giving, and hoping, and I'm trying to get blank there, and some other stuff. All of your actions and activities that you think can be very loving, compassionate issues, they do not unprogram the ego. All it does is temporarily put it in a bag. It temporarily sets it aside. So you can go out and you can spend your day and you can get up in the morning and you can start your prayers, you can start your mantras, you can do your blessings, you can do your givings, you can go out and you can serve, and your mind becomes busy, busy, busy with all this kind of stuff that you're pursuing. But when the busyness slows down and you come back and it's the end of the day and you about the time that you're ready to start to go to bed, your mind begins to quiet down. And then you begin to hear from deeper of your subconscious mind, and it begins to tell you, this isn't really working, is it? And you come to that point of surrender. And when you come to the point of surrender, the divine mind says, here I am. This is what you've always been looking for. Now, to really get there, you got to reprogram. So I become the dominant thought process in your life. Because right now, the dominant thought processes for about 98-99% of the people on this planet is the ego thought process. Because, see, to unprogram the ego mind, you have to undo, let go, relinquish, surrender any psychological, emotional attachment and belief system of anything of this world. Because you're believing in and attached to something that isn't real. The bottom line issue, you have to come to understand this isn't real. It's just an illusion. I'm living in a dream. And the objective is to wake up from the dream. Now, that waking up process takes a long time. It takes very diligent and vigilant work. Nobody else can do that for you. No amount of spiritual experiences or healing modalities can come from the outside to do it for you. You and me are the only ones that can reprogram our mind. We can use the healing modalities. We can use the experiences as aids and tools to help us. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of those. Because the healing modalities can sometimes strip away the intensity, the density, the darkness, the pain. And when you strip that stuff away, then you begin to open up and you can see more about what it is that you need to do and how to pursue this. And you'll come to that point. That's all I want. Down inside, all I really want is I just want to go home. Because that's all that there is. That is what's real. Heaven, oneness with God is what is real. Everything else is just an illusion. And we're even coming to the point of understanding how quantum physics proves to us the world is just a hologram of a vibration of energy, and we're living in this dream. So it's not just me saying that. It's not just some religious master saying that. It's just not some woo-woo teacher saying that. It's also backed up by hard science. It's part of our growth and learning process. And here's what I've come to understand and discover. When you finally get to that point, but let me take a step back. You know, it's almost like in this lifetime, I felt like I've lived multiple lifetimes. As so many of us, I had lived a life where I was trying to find meaning, trying to find purpose, wanting to find love. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. I grew up in poverty. I basically had a father that barely had much more than a minimum wage job. He never had much money to support us. He had very little ambition in his life to improve himself. I had a mother that had severe mental problems, and some of you have heard the story. My mother also was abducted by aliens. That created a lot of tension and problems in our family. And so I didn't know what it was to experience more because I always lived pretty much, in poverty. I can remember as early as the sixth grade, if I wanted to have a bicycle, I had to go out and get a paper route and earn the money myself. So I was always working, doing something, earning money from the time I was in the sixth grade, because if I wanted nice clothes, I had to have a job and earn it. If I wanted a bicycle, I had to have a job and earn it, because my parents didn't have any money to give to me for anything. They just barely got by themselves. And that was life for me. And then when I got into high school, I had this very successful scholarship program. I actually did, in spite of living in poverty, I actually did very well in school. And that gave me something that made me feel good, and I went off into this banking career, but then all of a sudden I had this deep, deep spiritual experience, and I left that, and I went off into Bible school and seminary to go into ministry. And that worked for a while, and I didn't do very well. So after about 12 years of church ministry, I was struggling. I was trying to find meaning and purpose. You know, you're done with church ministry. You got a master's degree from the seminary. Now, what do you go do? You don't know what kind of, you don't take a seminary degree into the workforce. Now, it gives you some certain skills. Yeah. And so I floundered around for a little bit, and then I started stumbling into politics. And the next thing I know, I was running for office and I became an elected official. And then all of a sudden my world changed. That gave me a sense of accomplishment, a sense of purpose, and a sense of meaning. Because, you see, I couldn't go after finding God in the true sense of understanding the ego because I was still trying to find myself. That's where so many of us are. We're trying to find ourselves. We're trying to find what gives us purpose. We're trying to find what gives us meaning. We're trying to find a sense of love. And we keep looking and pursuing and looking and pursuing, and that's just the process of growth. I'm not intending to be negative about that. Or, caustic about that. That's just what we live through as humans. And I experienced a lot of success. When I ended my legislative career as a senator, when I went anywhere for any type of a function, I was always the VIP. I always had the red carpet rolled out for me. I was always the guest of honor. Oh, the senator is here. You see, it raised the status and the specter of the scope of the event if the senator was here. I'd go to private weddings and I'd be introduced that the senator was here. I was if the senator was present, it meant this was an important event. And that's how a lot of people viewed stuff, and that's the world that I was put into. Down inside, I didn't really like it because I thought, I just want to be me. I just want to be an everyday guy who goes and does my job. But I had to learn how to always have the red carpet rolled out for me. In some ways, I was uncomfortable with it. But on the other hand, I experienced what I would call success. I'd gotten to the climb to the top of the mountain of my career, of what I tried to accomplish for myself. And you want to know what? When I got to the top of a mountain, all I really found was there was a bunch of rare air. That's about it. Because, see, it didn't satisfy the longing of the soul to go back home with God. It just doesn't do it. Why? Because it's dualistic in nature. I'm pursuing things that are not real. I'm living in the world of the hologram. And all I'm doing is creating another experience that does not reprogram the ego mind to allow the divine mind to come to be the dominant mind. So I went through various experiences, and I went through all kinds of shifts and changes in my life. My life is the example of somebody who went through a 180-degree shift and change in a very short period of time. And then when I got to the point where I was done with my political career and I went through my financial failure, my whole life started to fall apart, and I financially totally lost everything that I had, and I had to file bankruptcy, and I ended up, you know, losing my home to foreclosure. Nothing was going right in my life. That's what brought me to the bottom core of surrender. And when I got to that point, I started crying out once again. I said, God, I've always tried to be a good person, a good Christian, to study you. I was a minister, and I did all this stuff. Why am I struggling here? And things started to open up. And then all of a sudden, I just started entering into this whole new world of discovering what I call the shadow world of what was true. That our financial system that is presented to us is not real. That, yes, there are aliens and spaceships out there and motherships and all kinds of stuff that is out there that is real. And, yes, there are galactic beings that communicate with us and that they are very real. And, yes, that we have governments that are run by the shadow issues of power and money that is very real. And I went through all these different experiences, and I was even able to be taken to the very depth that very few people have ever gone to. It was in December of last year I had the opportunity to take a trip to China. And the ambassador said, you're going to sit down and have dinner with the Red Dragon and his partner. Now, that's a counterpart to him. It's not a business. It's basically they are associates at the same level. It's another what I call, you know, a master of the family. And he made a comment to me. He says, how do you think it's going to sit down and have dinner with two of the people who run the world? It stunned me. Huh? You know, I didn't say anything. I listened. I said, okay. So we made our trip to China. We sat down. We were having dinner with the Red Dragon. And we were getting into some philosophical discussions about, you know, who is what and where, what's the role of the cabal, what they do, what's the role of the family. And he said to me, pull out a $1 bill. Your American $1 bill. On the back there, you see the pyramid. He says, let me explain that to you. You see the pyramid. The pyramid is all the various financial layers and stratas of the structure of this world. At the very bottom, it's obviously those that are either slaves or in utter poverty. And at the very top are the most powerful bankers and rulers that control the money. And above that is the eye. And the eye are the 13 Illuminati families. And he said, and above them is us, the dragon family. We're above the eye. And there are six rulers and masters in that family, above that status above the eye. And you're sitting down right now and having dinner with two of those six. Now, having said that, I share this stuff at the workshops. And I said, well, you think that they could come in and they could fix the world and they could do that and they could do this and they could take their quadrillions of dollars and put it to work and they could stop all the wars and they could stop all the pain and killing. But they won't, because they're not supposed to. Because, you see, they have what is called a divine order, a divine decree that they are not to interfere with the free will of the human race, in spite of the fact that they could. So how I view it is the family who controls all of this world's money supply. Oh, they could if they wanted to, but they have the capacity to do that. they treat us kind of as angels treat us. Angels are those divine beings. And you notice angels don't step in to micromanage and interrupt our lives and interrupt our free will. They let us do all of our dumb, stupid, crazy stuff. They let us kill. They let us create wars. They let us pollute and degrade this planet. They allow us to fight with each other. They allow us to go through and experience all of these different things that we're supposed to, that we want to experience before we get to the point of truly understanding how the world really works. They will, every once in a while, they will step in. Like maybe you had this life assignment, this life plan, and you're about ready to get into a car accident and it's going to kill you and it's not your time to die. They'll step in and rescue you. That's when they do, but they will not violate the free will. They'll make sure that you stay on path and course of your choice of free will for what is called your life assignment and your life plan. Well, the family does that with the world's money supply. And at the right appropriate time, they are supposed to start releasing those funds to the human race. And this is that right appropriate time. But it's not going to be released all overnight. It's going to come very slowly in a very slow and deliberate step-by-step process. The family had lived in obscurity and quietness for literally hundreds and hundreds of years. And it's only been in the last year and a half that they're starting to come out into the public. The ambassador has the title of ambassador because he's their spokesperson. He first started communicating through Ron Van Dyke, and then about 2 months later he started communicating through me. And he has now evolved to the point that he has his own program. When I and Charla and I had dinner with him, the Red Dragon, in December of last year, we were the very first common outsiders to ever sit down and have dinner with him. He is now to the point that the people who are doing the project funding, they get to go and not only have lunch and dinner with him, sometimes they even get to spend the whole day with him. And there's been about 60 of them that have now done that. You see, they're very, very slowly stepping out into the open. This is a part of what I call the evolution of the human race, of our own growth and evolutionary process. And in all of that, it's all a part of us as a collective getting back to God. But the question is, we're also now starting to truly understand what it takes to get there. When I talk about the role of the human ego, it's the undoing, it's the healing, and it's the reprogramming of the human ego to allow the divine mind to come forward. Where did we hear about that in spirituality? Yes, there were always a few that would talk about it, but it was never coming forward to the masses. And it's now starting to come forward to thousands and thousands and thousands who are going to be able to grasp it and understand it because we have evolved as a collective to come to that point. And that's why I share this with you. Because if you want to know what it means to be able to attract all the money you want in your life, reprogram the human ego and life and money will flow from you because it will only be your thoughts. It's your thoughts. They're the only thing that stops you from having everything that you want. Clear, heal, undo, and reprogram the human ego so it becomes silenced and the divine mind comes to the surface and becomes the dominant thought process of your life. And you're unlimited. Unlimited. Jesus said, everything that I did, you can do it and more. And that's what you will have. And we are moving into a historical time of our human growth and evolutionary process. Instead of seeing one person here and only one person there and another person there and only a handful around the world really living at that level, I think in the next 20 and 30 years, we are going to be seeing hundreds of thousands that are going to be moving into that level. Tens of thousands? I don't know. But we're going to see them by the thousands and the thousands where it's usually been one, the ones and twos and fives. That's what we are doing. We're shifting and changing our world and we're bringing about the world that we always have wanted to have. And in the process, we are getting back home. Now, in the books that I read, predominantly, you know, from the Foundation of A Course in Miracles and also with Gary Renard's book, Disappearance of the Universe, it basically says once you come to the point that you've done all the rides in the amusement park, and you've come to the point of understanding that none of those rides are taking me home, and I've got to reprogram my mind to get me back home. And you start that process of doing that work to reprogram the mind, and nobody else can do it for you. Once you come to that point, you begin to hunger for that. And it's the only thing that really matters to you, because down inside, your soul is on fire and wants it. And you start the work. And from that point on, it will take you the rest of your life, and if not another 1 to 2 lifetimes, to get there. Because when you die, you have not unprogrammed the ego mind. It's still there. So you got to come back and do it again and again. And almost all of us as human beings have lived hundreds and hundreds, if not over 1,000 lifetimes. And your choice, the free will choice that you really have, is how fast you want to do it. Are you going to continue to let the world dictate to you how you're going to get there, and you're going to have to live another 100 or 200 or 300 lifetimes? Or are you going to put yourself on the fast track? The very fact that you are listening to what I am saying and you are willing to pursue this will put you in the top 1% of all the people on this planet who are ready to move forward. There aren't very many people that do this stuff. And that's not just me saying that. Again, that comes out of what I call the quotation that comes from Jesus in where he is discussed in Disappearance of the Universe and A Course in Miracles. Right now, only about 1% of people on this planet are truly at that point. But you know what I think? 5 years and 10 years, that's going to start picking up. We are the ones. The very fact that you're listening to this program, the very fact that you have watched that video, we are the ones who really, really, truly have a divine call to change our world. This is not a coincidence that you're here listening to me tonight. It's not a coincidence that I'm talking about this. It's not a coincidence that all of a sudden my listenership just totally drops off when I talk about this topic. Because the people who are hearing it are the people who are ready for it. The people who are hearing it are the people who the soul is calling out, I'm ready to leave the amusement park. I'm ready to step away from it. I'm ready to get off the merry-go-round. I'm ready to leave all the great, neat, tantalizing, you know, great experiences and go to work. Reprogramming my ego mind to undo it so the divine mind can come forward. And when the divine mind comes forward, then you begin to live everything of divinity. Everything. Life flows with a purpose. You don't struggle to find out who you are, what you're supposed to be, or where you're going to be successful. Success is a word that doesn't even appear in your vocabulary, because there is no such thing. There's only a position of being. And you're being there one with God. And in the being, it's not a sense of being a being good. It's a sense of being of divine, of oneness, because the ego has been undone. And life flows for you. You grow into it. You experience it step by step. I shared with you that it was about 9-10 months ago that I had a complete shift in my life where I had undone the ego mind in these relationships that I had with these two people in particular. And at that point in time, my life totally changed. It was a process of growth for 4 and 5 months. And after 4, 5, 6 months, all of a sudden, life started to flow for me. And I took another huge shift back in late August, early September. It was like I stepped into a whole different arena of life just flowing. Other than one or two people that I'm still working through some issues to, they kind of pressed my button and they bugged the crap out of me at times. In my thoughts, but it's my doing, my making. I understand that it's my.
Dave, for some reason, we can't hear you. Well, I'm not sure if the audience can hear me, but for some reason, Dave just disappeared on us. Now, I'm not sure if I've disappeared. Okay, I think I can get a message to Dave and see if he can come back on. Well, he said quite a mouthful, hasn't he? Alan, can you tell me if you can hear me at least? If you can hear me, can you text me and then I'll know at least you can hear me and maybe the audience can hear me. Dear audience, please, if you can still hear me, please excuse Dave disappearing. Let me see if we can try to get him back on. Well, dear audience, I'm so sorry about Alan disappearing on us here. But we have a lot of food for thought. And just in case he can join us again. Let's see if you can join us again. Let me give you that number. It's 347-850-1424. And you'd press 1. We're still trying to get him back on the line. And he's got a lot that he put before us. I mean, talking about the ego and the divine mind and some provocative statements, I would say, about what basically the meaning of life is, which is, of course, reconnection with our Father God, or some people call it Source. And the interesting thing, too, is the assertion that this life that we're living is an illusion. And, of course, that's an idea that many teachings share with us. And I think what is a little bit daunting is... Oh, I think I hear something.